Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Welcome to the Fighting on Film podcast, the podcast all about classic and obscure war movies, from the Normandy landings to the days of chivalry and swords. If it's been captured on film, we're going to try and cover it. I'm Robbie of RM Military History.
I'm Matthew Moss of Historical Firearms and the Armourer's Bench.
Hello, we are back from a week's hiatus. Now, I was away before we did the Duane Epstein episode about the Dirty Dozen. That was really good. Great episode, Matt. You held the fort down well while I was away. Yeah, I had a few family commitments that we weren't able to put the show out as scheduled. However, we're back now. And we thought this episode, we'd touch on something a little different. Now, we are going to talk about war movies later on in the show. But unless you've been living under a rock in the entertainment world, you'll see that currently SAG-AFTRA and the Writers Guild of America are on strike. The Writers Guild of America have been on strike for a couple of months previously. However, SAG-AFTRA striking as well was unprecedented. It hasn't happened for 60 years. The last time that SAG-AFTRA and the Writers Guild struck was 1960. Oh, wow. So long ago that Ronald Reagan was head of SAG-AFTRA at the time, if you didn't know.
Oh, so Ron led a strike. Wow.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's a completely other episode there.
That's my boy.
It really, really is. But we just wanted to highlight on the fact that, you know, we really care about this industry and it's important to us, and it's given me and Matt many opportunities that we wouldn't have had in our lives through the podcast. You know, whether that be reviews for upcoming movies, screeners for things, going to premieres, for press premieres, things like that. But we want to put a line in the sand that we are with, you know, the people who are striking. It's their livelihoods. It's AI potentially taking people's jobs, yes, which affects, you know, even if you're listening to this show and you're part of the film community or listening to this show and you're part of the history community, it can affect us all.
AI is going to be a big deal for a lot of industries.
And it really, really is.
SAG-AFTRA have really highlighted, you know, the dangers in terms of, you know, what AI can pose to a creative industry. Now, of course, this is an American strike, but so much of this industry revolves around the US film and TV industry.
You know, just touching on what we do, like most of the big war movies that have come out in the last, since 2000, have been American pictures. You know,
they've all had American money in there, haven't they, as well?
Yeah, exactly.
Most of them.
So it really affects the genre.
At the same time, that AI element, again, is going to impact European filmmaking, Asian filmmaking, African filmmaking. It's eventually going to roll out to all of these places. Where it's going to impact on how writers are paid, how actors are paid, and also those really important kind of sort of, what's the word I'm looking for? It's identity, isn't it? That's the key element.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know why I couldn't think of identity. No, it's like identity. It, that is the key thing, isn't it?
It bleeds into everything because,
yeah,
the writers of a film, actors, you have a certain style, you have a way that you do things, you're loved for that. You know, look at how Tarantino writes a film and look at how someone like Kubrick made a film, you know, or had a script written for him. Like, those people do the things that they do because they're them. And for a computer to come in and be able to, quote unquote, replicate what they do, it's beggars belief the kind of things they want maybe implement, like taking an actor's likeness from one movie, or you know, writing away someone's entire identity for eternity, and you being paid once for your likeness. I don't think it's right.
Yeah, it kind of plays into this whole evolving system with streaming as well, where I think it was Orange is the New Black. There was an actress this week who came out and basically highlighted how little she's been paid since that show began streaming.
Again, it was on pennies, wasn't it?
Yeah, it kind of got rolled out to a number of the other like regions on Netflix, I think. And I think it's the 10-year anniversary as well.
Something
and
like that.
She's made like $20, something ridiculous.
It was like sub $500 or something. Yeah, it was nearly a decade of your life. It's crazy to me. And it's the whole thing of how, you know, back in the day, I mean, I'm sure people listening know this, but back in the day, you could be on a cable show and it could get 10 seasons or whatever, and you'd be able to live off that money and audition for things and try and get new work in between jobs. Because I've been an actor, it's fucking hard. If you're not in the top percent of actors who are earning millions, it's a fucking hard industry.
There's a huge disparity between TV residuals and streaming residuals.
Exactly. So, you know, people rely on this income to live and for streaming services to just blow the whole thing out of the water and be like, well, we're streaming, we're not going to treat it the same. However, we want the same treatment in the space when it comes to award seasons, when it comes to advertising, when it comes to how they're reviewed. You know, we see it as it's content, it's a film, it's a movie, more now than we did when it started. These streaming services have become normalized, so why should they treat their workers and the actors and writers differently? This is what this is about. So I think line in the sand for us is critics are not on strike, but we do not feel comfortable, or we would not take any payment or anything, or any offers from structure.
Not that we ever have, actually.
Not that we ever have.
Any payment, to be honest.
We've never been paid or treated by any entity for our opinion on the show, any review. Everything we've ever done has been, we've sourced it ourselves. Any fan of the show has talked to us and met us. You know, I'm very open about this. Me and Matt work really hard behind the scenes to get what we get. But I know that some other influencers and reviewers on other platforms have been offered crazy money to do things and break the picket lines.
I saw some articles about that too.
Yeah, you know, people getting offered like $5,000 for something when that's way above industry average. So we won't be reviewing Oppenheimer. If you're interested, we won't be reviewing that right now.
Not yet, anyway. So essentially the plan is, for now, we'll just continue doing our normal, obscure, really interesting, but
all those great war films we haven't covered yet.
God knows the war movie genre has plenty of ground for us to cover before we get to, you know, modern fare. When the strike's settled, we'll come back, we'll take a look at Oppenheimer and anything else that we want to review. But I think it's important to take a stand, show a bit of solidarity, and recognize the importance or the, you know, possible threats that AI poses to a creative industry, which I think...
And just how people should be paid for their work.
Of course, exactly. And we need to outline that it's writers and it's actors in the... Writers have seen their work appear in ChatGPT, other AI platforms, and we'll take Sarah Silverman. She was mentioned on an episode of Today Explained that Lauren sent to me, and essentially, someone went onto ChatGPT and asked, can you tell me a joke in Sarah Silverman's style? And it was perfect. It was exactly the nuance and the phrasing and the way that she formulates her humor was completely replicated. And what struck me is she's now suing Meta and ChatGPT and a number of other companies because of this. If you can do that with, you know, a joke, you can do that with a TV show, you can do that with a movie. I mean, we watched a few months ago, we watched an animated live stream of Seinfeld.
Yeah.
Which was literally, it had obviously been fed, the AI had been fed a whole load of Seinfeld. And it watched these and it had taken on board some of the key tropes and some of the like the things that make it recognizable as Seinfeld.
With some refinement and, you know, stronger computing behind it.
Well, that was hokey.
Could make lost episodes.
Well, exactly. That was hokey. But that was done on a, you know, that was just someone playing around. You put studio money into that.
Exactly.
And you can the possibilities are boundless, and that's exciting in some respects, but you have to temper that with understanding that it's a creative industry and the people that are creating need to be paid properly, and you can't manipulate someone's identity to make a piece of media.
Everyone's been talking about it on Twitter, things like that. I've seen it everywhere. People are saying, we're in Black Mirror now, we're in it, you know, this is how it feels. It's scary. And me and Matt, you know, we write articles for a living. We do a lot of, you know, if you follow any of our other projects or you know, keep up to date with what we do outside of the podcast, you'll know that me and Matt write pretty much every day for our work, you know, to make ends meet. And
I've got literally thousands of articles online. And if you fed them all into ChatGPT, I'm sure it could mimic my writing style.
I mean, you can't look up a rare gun without Matt's, you know, Matt's website or his name popping up. You can't. It's just the truth. The amount of times I've written something and I'm like, oh, okay, this, I need to know that something about, I don't know, like a Lewis gun or something. And Matt's name will pop up because he's done something on it. But for me, I write history articles a bit more broad, not as niche as Matt's, but not putting Matt's work down, incredible work.
Not at all. It is niche.
Yeah, but for a computer to be able to come in and give you, I don't know, 2,000 words on, I don't know, the land army, you know, the women's land army, is it something off the top of my head? It could do that. And you're not going to know. You know, you're not going to know who's written that. It could be your...
And we've tested this, haven't we? We've asked it to do certain things. We've asked it to, you know, we've wargamed with it. That's a video coming to Rob's channel soon.
That's a big, long edit I'm going to have to do. Yeah,
it is, yeah. But we've played with it. We understand the capabilities. I've listened to a number of podcasts and articles with academics where they've talked about they're seeing students using ChatGPT. They're seeing methodologies impacted by ChatGPT. And this thing is growing. And so, you know, continuing that, this week what we've done is we asked ChatGPT to put together a top 10 war movies list for us. That's the kind of the industry standard for like our area of reviewing movies and stuff, isn't it?
Yeah. And before we go into these lists, we should clear up that we don't hate AI because we see it as it could be a tool, it could be effective, it could be useful, it can help us. We're really angry at the studios for just having the audacity to think that people's livelihoods can be replaced wholesale by it.
Yeah, it's a misuse, isn't it? It's a misuse of a tool.
Yeah.
Or a misappropriation of a tool, which is going to eventually be really powerful.
That's what it is. And on that note, we'll go for a little break and we'll come back.
Hello there. Sorry to interrupt. I wanted to let you know that you can now join our supporting cast over on Patreon. As thanks for your support, you'll be able to help us pick films, submit questions for guests, have first pick on brand new and exclusive merch, and much more. Thank you for your support. Now back to the show.
It's just to pick up what Matt was saying there. I mean, last weekend, if you were on Twitter or, you know, on social media, it's hard to know where people are now with threads and all the new stuff that's going in.
OnlyFans.
OnlyFans, yeah, it could be. Give it time. So there was a list that the Sunday Times put together for their top 40 war films. There were some big names involved. It was Tom Holland, some producers.
Max Hastings.
Al Murray.
The director of All Quiet on the Western Front.
Yeah.
I think. But yeah, there was a whole plethora of people. All people who, when you look at that, you go, oh yeah, they're definitely like people you would ask.
Yeah. Exactly. And we, you know, we always get tagged in lists and things whenever anyone makes them. And they obviously they are 100% subjective. Film is an art form and different strokes for different folks. But you know, there's some more missions there. People are going, oh, there wasn't any Cruel Sea. There wasn't any Ice Cold in Alex, No Longest Day, things like that. People were angry that Fury was involved. And it always creates like a really interesting discussion.
It fuels debate as well, doesn't it?
Really does. Yeah. It's like, you know, what do people want? What do people regard when they, you know, when you rank a war film or war films? I mean, I've done a top five for a magazine, the Best of British, that's coming out in hopefully a couple of months. And it's hard.
All good news agents.
Yeah, exactly. It's really hard to quantify, you know, what, 100 years of film into 1,600 words or whatever it was. Totally. It's incredibly difficult.
When people ask, like, because people do ask now that obviously we've done this podcast for quite a while, people do ask us, like, what are your favourite war movies? And I simply cannot give you a definitive, like, top five.
No way.
It's impossible.
It's fluid. It changes every week, every month, every day. It's, you know, and I always think, well, you've got a new favourite film, you haven't seen it yet. Because how many films are out there? You know, there's got to be a movie.
Could have been made 60 years ago and it's your new fave.
Exactly.
Nine Men.
You have to be so open-minded when it's Nine Men. Nine Men's in my top five list, obviously. Like, it could not be in there. But we asked, to get back on track, we asked ChatGPT, which is, you know, currently really popular, got a lot of headlines when it came out, to do its top 10 war films. And that's all the prompt we gave it.
Well, to give you the exact prompt, we asked it, can you create us a list of your top 10 war films with reasons why? And it did.
In about 10 seconds.
Yeah, it was like that. And you know what? I was impressed with some of it. I'll honestly admit that I was like, okay, that's interesting.
Yeah. So we're going to go through them one by one and just talk about it. And then we've got 10 obscure war films after.
Yeah, we tried to push it a little, didn't we? We wanted to stretch its legs.
Exactly. We were, you know, the Foff Labs were the Foff Boffins this week. Robbie and Matt's Ministry of Ungentlemanly Film Criticisms.
I have donned the white lab coat.
Yeah, I'm wearing a snazzy gilet.
I'm currently in a dark room with a pair of very thick spectacles on. And I am typing code in green onto a black screen, and there's 90s spy movie music being played.
I'm behind a big perspex see-through wall with two MOD boffins, and every time and it, to talk to Matthew, we hit a big chunk intercom and we go, "You can do it now, Matthew. Godspeed, Matthew." So, in at number 10. We have 2001's Black Hawk Down, and the ChatGPT description is, Ridley Scott's intense and gritty film depicts the Battle of Mogadishu, a US military operation gone awry in Somalia. The film's immersive action sequences, realistic portrayal of combat, and ensemble cast contributes to its gripping narrative.
Now, I thought, okay, good pick. Yeah,
not bad.
That obviously often makes lists. But when it gave it the reason, its reasoning for why it included it and a little description of what the film's actually about, I was like, that could have been copy pasted from someone's.
You would never know. That's the scary thing. You'd never know. I could have written that. You could have written that.
Yeah.
You
know,
countless FOF listeners could have written the exact same.
Absolutely. It's a perfectly obvious thing that you would write to describe Black Hawk Down.
Good film. We should review it sometime.
We should actually.
We might be reviewing it sooner rather than later. You know,
that's true. Yeah.
You know, FOF
there's a lot of films on this list that we're going to go through that we need to get to. But you know,
ChatGPT has seen us, to be fair, list. We felt seen.
In our defense, though, there is no chivalry and there are no swords on this list.
No, there's not. Even ChatGPT fucking ignores that. Did I say ignores? ChatGPT doesn't rate them.
Oh, we're going to get letters. Oh, no.
We get a barrage.
Okay. Number nine, it comes in with Letters from Iwo Jima, 2006. It describes it as, directed by Clint Eastwood, this film presents the Battle of Iwo Jima from the Japanese perspective. It humanizes the enemy and offers a profound exploration of the individual experiences and sacrifices made during war. The film's nuanced storytelling and strong performances are remarkable.
I mean, yeah. If anyone who's seen Letters from Iwo Jima, that's what they think. And to, yeah, again, to echo it, I mean, it's surely pulling from loads of reviews, loads of little like IMDb things like things have been fed in.
Hundreds of reviews.
Yeah. And again, a great choice. I don't know if it'd make my top 10, but it's a good one.
Again, it's not our list. It's ChatGPT's. Exactly. It's entitled to its opinion.
Exactly.
All lists are subjective.
Even AI generated ones. It's subjective. Yeah. The Bridge on the River Kwai is in at number 8. God, I feel like a Top of the Pops chap.
My God, memories.
So it said about The Bridge on the River Kwai, directed by David Lean, this World War II film directs the story of British prisoners of war forced to build a bridge for their Japanese captors. It explores the themes of duty, honour, and the clash of ideologies. The film's iconic performances and gripping climax make it a classic.
You see, it's describing fairly complex themes there.
Mm.
And Bridge obviously is a film that has those complex themes in there. But the thing about it is, it's obviously pulling from other reviews online and other lists probably. But it also knows to include comment on that, which I think is
interesting. Got to say how cool Jack Hawkins looks in his commando gear, though.
Well, like, it could have literally just been Jack Hawkins looks great in his commando drip in this film.
Hawkins looks great in his commando wear. Trying to do a robot voice.
Oh, is that what that was?
Okay. Yeah.
Number seven. The Thin Red Line. Terrence Malick's visually stunning film captures the horrors and beauty of war in the Pacific. And see, the beauty bit was jarring, but it is a very nicely shot film.
It takes some risks. Put that
during
way.
World War II. Yeah. It offers philosophical reflections on the nature of, reflections on nature, humanity, and the futility of war. The ensemble cast, including Sean Penn and Jim Caviezel, adds depth to the storytelling. I mean, ChatGPT could have listed about a hundred other actors in there
Could have given you like top ten lists of actors that didn't feature in that movie.
Yeah,
but yet shot footage. Like, there's so many. True. You know. Yeah,
I could have added infamous for causing a great deal of material.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. If you were a 90s male lead, you were pretty much on set, I think, in that one.
Yeah, you were retained at the very least.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you're a big fat retainer. It was in the Sunday Times list. It was quite high on that. I know
it was.
Yeah. I know, it's not sure. It's a polarizing one, isn't it?
Let me be subjective for a moment. I'm not entirely sure that it deserves to be in the top 10 of a top 40 list, you know.
Okay.
And something like, I don't know, Come and See isn't in there as well.
I mean, it would get in my top 20 at the moment. Yeah. It might not get in my top 20 next week. That's the whole thing with these lists. So in at number 6, it's a non-mover. couldn't resist. In at number 6 is Paths of Glory, 1957, directed by Stanley Kubrick. The film explores the injustices and absurdities of war. It follows a French army unit during World War I and delves into themes of honour, sacrifice, and the corruption of power. Kirk Douglas delivers a compelling performance.
As we move through these, what's striking to me is that it hasn't made any glaring errors yet. No. So I don't know about you, like when we first started messing about with ChatGPT, I asked it about the pit, because obviously I asked about the pit.
Yeah.
And it came up with some stuff that was, glaringly incorrect. And similarly, like I've seen people online talk about, you know, asking it about specific battles or specific periods of history. And the hallmark of it is there's always something that is like slightly off.
Yeah.
Or incorrect. Yeah, I've done just it with, glaringly wrong.
I've done it with, like, when I was writing an article a few months back, I was like, oh, could you just give me like some of the key facts around this certain battle? And a lot of them were just like, I was like, no, like it's sort of,
yeah.
But I think over the months, it's got a little bit more refined, a little bit more clever.
I think that is true.
Because my wife uses it a lot in her job. She works in tech and she uses it a lot. And she's like, you can be really obscure with this now and it will get what you need. It will do what you want. You know, as long as you're very dialed into what you're telling it, you can get the results. And when we drop the chat war game thing we did, that was really interesting too. We had to battle the AI at some points to try and get it to remember what we were doing. I don't know whether it would still get the same results now.
I imagine, you know what, it might have moved on a little bit and it might be even more surprising than it was when we tried it.
Yeah. Anyway, no, Paths of Glory, great film. Kubrick. Yeah,
definitely another we need to cover.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Number five, we have Dunkirk 2017. Christopher Nolan's Dunkirk focuses on the evacuation of Allied soldiers during World War II. Doesn't tell you where they're evacuating from. ChatGPT coming in a little bit careless there.
True.
It skillfully combines three intersecting storylines, creating a tense and immersive experience. The film's innovative structure, breathtaking visuals, and Hans Zimmer's score make it a cinematic triumph. Wow, okay.
Wow, ChatGPT is a Nolan fanboy.
Yeah, Chris Nolan's spent a lot of time on ChatGPT talking to it and being like...
Imagine that.
I would not put that in the top 10 list.
Dunkirk 2017 gets its flowers from the AI there. I don't think it'd breach my top 50, but that's just me. You know,
it's subjective.
Brilliant at the cinema when I saw it, and then diminishing returns every repeat viewing. But hey ho. An interesting one to cover when we do cover it. Number four is Platoon 1986, directed by Oliver Stone. Platoon provides a gritty and unflinching portrayal of the Vietnam War. The film's realistic battle sequences, moral ambiguity, and exceptional ensemble cast, including Charlie Sheen. And Willem Dafoe contributes to its enduring impact.
Fair.
Very fair.
A decent but expectable choice.
Yeah. Platoon always gets high on these.
Yeah.
I mean, it started that glut of really well done Vietnam War movies, didn't it? Well, it didn't start it, but it's in that late 80s period.
It is, yeah.
You know, obviously Apocalypse Now did, but it didn't really because Go Tell the Spartans did. But, you know, it I get what it's trying to do.
Number three, Full Metal Jacket 1987. Stanley Kubrick's examination of the Vietnam War follows a group of Marine recruits from their brutal training to their experiences on the battlefield. The film's exploration of dehumanization and the duality of human nature is thought-provoking. Again, someone has done GCSE A-level film studies with ChatGPT. They are pulling out the themes.
Yeah.
I love it.
They're sitting in the corner, like, and they're the one that, like, you know, they've got like an A24 hat on right now. And they're like, you know, the themes of Fumble Jacket, it's not actually just a war film, you know, it's like an exploration of like the human condition.
Duality, man.
Yeah, yeah, man. Like, you know, the thing about Kubrick, right? Doing that, isn't it? Full Metal Jacket again. It's a high choice on
it's
any list.
Always on list.
It's always on list.
Justifiably
yeah.
so. You know, you can. Yep. You can definitely make a case for it. You can make a case for most of these.
You really can. Yeah.
It's just it's so interesting.
From Bangkok.
It's so interesting that you know the top four of these are all set in Vietnam. Because what's number two, Rob?
Number two is Apocalypse Now, 1979, directed by Francis Ford Coppola. The film takes a surreal and disturbing journey into the heart of darkness during the Vietnam War. It explores the psychological toll of war and features iconic performances by Marlon Brando and Martin Sheen. Absolutely top marks for including the name of the book that the film is based on in its in its summing up. That's absolutely top fucking draw.
Oh my god, I'm just going to retire now.
Exactly, if that was written by a human, that was brilliant. That's the greatest thing it's written so far to me. Yeah, Apocalypse Now, it always features up there. People always cite it as one of the, you know, the genre's most, I don't know, like affecting and interesting movies.
Yeah. Enduring.
So much going on for it, enduring, yeah. Again, and then number one. Matt, do you want to reveal number one?
Ooh, drum roll, please. Number one is, of course, 1998's Saving Private Ryan. This Steven Spielberg masterpiece is renowned for its gripping and realistic depiction of the D-Day invasion during World War II. The intense battle sequences, exceptional cinematography, and emotionally charged performances make it a must-watch war film.
It was inevitable, wasn't it? Yeah. It was inevitable. Yeah. I think I've seen countless top tens that feature Saving Private Ryan as its top choice. I mean, I get it, because it's the movie that reignited a genre. It's the movie that we now sort of pin on whenever a new movie comes out. We're like, yeah, but it's no Saving Private Ryan, or, you know, Saving Private Ryan's already done this. It's kind of...
Yeah, well, it's
such
it
a
is
touchstone.
Seminal, isn't it?
Yeah, it's seminal, yeah. And I don't like the fact that it gets hated on every now and then. You know, people
think
it's cool.
That's revisionism at work, though,
isn't it? People think it's really cool to be like, well, the start's really great, but then it just becomes like a road movie after. I'm like, what's the fucking point? You know, that's the plot, I'm afraid. That's how Spielberg made it. But no, every time I go back and watch it, it's one of my favourites. Like, what can I say?
I think the majority of people that you ask will agree that it should be in a top 15, top 20, top 10 somewhere.
It's the war movie that non-war movie fans will have seen.
Yeah, that's a very fair point, yeah.
They will have seen it. You know, it was such a cultural, massive thing at the time. You know, my mum and my dad didn't really do cinema. But they had a copy of Saving Private Ryan. You know, they talked about it. They told me, I wrote a piece on it for the Final Film website, actually. And they told me that it was massive at the time. You couldn't move for it, you know. And for two non-movie people to say that, that's got to be something.
Well, ChatGPT likes it, so, you know, can't be wrong.
Exactly. So, and then to sort of, you know, push things, as much as
we wanted to stretch ChatGPT's legs, didn't we?
We wanted to,
And you know, we were surprised by some of the eloquence that it came out with discussing themes.
It must have known the choices. You know, on our tour of the critical space was writing the prompts. It was me, by the way, fair listeners. It must have known that it had two juggernauts of film reviewing at the helm.
Upped its game because it knew it was going to get discussed.
So for the prompt, my friend.
For the prompt for the second one was, can you do the same but with obscure war filmers?
My fat fucking hands hitting the keys there, like Homer when he dials in that episode. It's like, the fingers you've dialed, are you too fat? It's like. So it said, certainly, here is a list of top 10 obscure war films that you might find interesting, along with reasons why they deserve recognition. So number 10, and it was an absolute curveball. We were so surprised it was on the list.
The shock on our faces.
I shouted a very loud expletive when we read this the other day. I was like, what's going on here? Like, So number 10 is Fires Were Started, 1943, directed by Humphrey Jennings. The British film provides a realistic and poetic portrayal of the daily lives and struggles of firefighters during the London Blitz of World War II. It offers a unique perspective on the home front and the courage of those fighting to protect their city. Yeah, it does. It's a great film. If any FOF listeners have not seen Fires Were Started, it's well worth checking out. I think it was on YouTube the last time I watched it. So if you do want to go and see it, it's out there. It's really good. It's when, I can't remember his Ealing off the top of my head, but it's when that whole sort of, we were making movies as propaganda pieces and they were like docudramas almost. That's the vibe it goes for. Yeah. It's set in firefighters during the Blitz. They've got some little characters in there, but it is literally almost a day in the life of a fire crew. It's really, really good stuff. But really interesting to see that the AI chose it as its number 10.
Yeah. I mean, I was shocked. And this list actually only gets better. It's great at the bottom, but then it goes really weird at the top. But we'll talk more about that in a moment. Number 9, Silent Mountain, 2014. This Austrian-Italian film portrays the lesser-known Italian front of World War I. It tells the story of an Austrian soldier trapped behind enemy lines and his struggle for survival. The film offers a visually stunning and poignant exploration of the forgotten aspects of the Great War. I have not seen that one.
Me neither.
So I can't comment on what the film's like, but ChatGPT's, you know, added one to the FOF list anyway.
Yeah, it's in the corner. It's cracked open a bottle of cold Pinot Grigio, lit a cigarette, and it's really testing us now, isn't it? It's like twirling the wine glass, taking a puff of the cigarette. Like, you boys really think you can test me now?
Have you boys seen The Cranes Are Flying?
Interesting, Matt. That is number 8 on our list. 1957's The Cranes Are Flying, directed by, gonna butcher this name, Mikhailai Kalatozov. I think I've got that right. The Soviet film focuses on the personal and emotional toll of war on civilians during World War II. It follows a young woman's experiences as she navigates love, loss, and resilience amid the chaos of war. Is that the one with the really cool crane shot? Is that it? Because that's a
cracker. Titling your film that and then having a really great crane shot.
I swear that it is the, I'm going to check.
I've seen it once years ago, and it's really, the cinematography on it is really clean. It is a genuinely interesting Russian war movie. But you know, it's just another that I was not expecting at all.
No, there's a scene where it's not a crane shot. It's like a continuity sequence in a way where she's on a bus and she goes through all traffic. I mean, that's a really well shot sequence. That's what I was thinking of.
Okay. Yeah.
But no, that's, you know, what a top pick there. Another one. Number seven
is, of course, The Battle of Algiers, 1966. This Italian-Algerian film depicts the Algerian struggle for independence from French colonial rule. It offers a realistic and politically charged exploration of guerrilla warfare, terrorism, and the complex dynamics of colonialism and liberation. Boy, doesn't it just ChatGPT.
ChatGPT on this list really likes its documentary style filmmaking.
It does. It really is very true. I mean, he's obviously sat there with his Pinot and he's like, you know what? I really do enjoy a bit of war cinema with some depth and an exploration of, you know, human themes. And I think that Battle of Algiers certainly does deserve a mid place on my list.
Yeah. Okay, it's going to go. Have you watched Seven Samurai? Have you seen that? It's gonna start.
Did you know that it actually inspired The Magnificent Seven?
It's gonna do that, isn't it?
At some point, it's gonna go. Do you know that Tame Impala is just one guy?
Yeah, it's got that energy right now, isn't it? Yeah. It started wearing baggy workwear and shopping in like the cultural district of cities, reading crack magazine.
Wearing Carhartt.
Hey, this is the Carhartt, man. Anyway, number five, number six is Cross of Iron, 1977, directed by Sam Peckinpah. This war film provides a gritty and unglamorous portrayal of the Eastern Front during World War II. It follows a German army unit engaged in brutal combat against Soviet forces. The film challenges traditional war film tropes and explores the futility of war.
At this point, ChatGPT has gone, you know, I could have included Come and See here, but, you know, I decided to go for a much more niche Eastern Front war movie. Mm.
Have you heard of Sam Peckinpah? Have you?
I love how we're literally forcing a persona onto an AI at this point.
Yeah, yeah. It's got a BFI membership. You know
it. Yeah, yeah. Every chance he's on the South Bank.
Yeah.
Every chance.
Yeah. He's got Criterion Collection Blu-rays.
Ooh, steelbooks galore.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He reads Sight and Sound. It's got a subscription to Sight and Sound.
God, Why are we roasting ChatGPT?
Roasting an AI. And then again, the things we're roasting, I do. I've got Collection Blu-rays.
We seem to be mirroring a little bit here. We're projecting.
Projecting. Anyway...
Number five.
Great, good choice. It's Shadows. A good film. It's a good film.
No, fair. Number five, Army of Shadows, 1969, directed by Jean-Pierre Melville. This French film focuses on the French resistance during World War II, offers a tense and atmospheric portrayal of the underground network's struggles and sacrifices, highlighting the moral dilemmas faced by its members.
Good choice.
I haven't seen Army of Shadows.
I've heard of it, not seen it.
Again, ChatGPT is coming for us, Rob.
Yeah, it is, yeah. Number four is the Human Condition trilogy, directed by Masaki Kobayashi. The Japanese trilogy explores the experiences of a Japanese pacifist during World War II. The film tackles themes of individual morality and the dehumanizing effects of war and the struggle to maintain one's principles amid the chaos of battle.
I love it. Great, yeah. That's a great inclusion. Really good. Hands up, haven't seen it.
I attempted to, and then I noticed that it was like 9 hours long, so I haven't.
Okay, fair.
And in the future, that is one we very, very merry welly, I would say that, that we may very well be reviewing in the future.
Well, I, for one, look forward to the Human Condition Trilogy Month.
Yes, yes.
We'll get ChatGPT on as a guest. Clearly knows a lot about it.
We'll have to make room for his hubris.
Number three, The Fires on the Plain, 1959, directed by Kon Ichikawa. This Japanese war film takes place in the Philippines during World War II. It follows a soldier suffering from tuberculosis as he navigates the brutality and desperation of war. The film delves into the psychological toll of conflict and the erosion of human decency.
I hadn't heard of it. Again, ChatGPT is calling us out here.
I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. I don't mind being stretched. And I think this list really did surprise me.
Yeah.
But again, it could have easily been pulled from a number of obscure, top 10 obscure movies you haven't seen.
And this is where I think ChatGPT and AI, the argument comes in as being a tool. So
yes.
I'm happy to use it to be like, hey, give me top 10 war movies I may not have seen, or give me top 10 films I may not have seen, just to broaden my own film horizons and be able to watch something, you know, find something quickly by using an app on my phone, just to be like, hey, give me a movie I might not have seen so I can watch it tonight and tell me what I can watch it on. Yeah. That's how I'd like to use the AI. That's how I'd like the AI to be implemented as a tool, you know, not some sort of Skynet overarching being that's going to, you know, make me a resistance fighter against the robots in 10 years. I don't want that. You know, well, that would be pretty cool, you know, but I don't want it.
Well, you know, the peace accords would finally come together talking about obscure war movies and our mutual love of Pinot Noir.
Yep. What was left of it after the better fighting? Number two is The Ascent, 1977, directed by Larissa Shepitko. The Soviet film focuses on two Soviet partisans captured by German forces during World War II. The film explores themes of heroism, sacrifice, and struggles for humanity in the face of extreme adversity.
Again, it's gone it's gone for telling us about the themes rather than, you know,
anything
more plot and who's in it.
Which, interesting. Eastern European picks in this top 10. It's almost like it's gone for obscure, so it's chosen an obscure region of filmmaking as well to maybe do that.
A lot of Italian and Japanese too, which I think is really interesting. It's tried to give a bit of a...
And that's always stuff that pops up when you talk about obscure, because I know that The Human Condition, that comes up a lot. I forget the name of the film, but you watched it, about the Japanese soldier who was found in the 70s still fighting the war. That one. I can't remember the name off the top of my head. But yeah, they're ones that always get picked up on. And number one.
It's interesting, you know, there's no Die Brücke, which is a kind of semi-obscure.
No Nine Men.
Yeah. No Nine Men. That's a very obscure British war movie.
No, Theirs Is the Glory. You know, things that we here would say, or things that we would hope would be added in, you know, or that, you know, they were not divided. You know, I'm amazed that Fires Were Started was even included in this.
Yeah.
But yeah. So number one, Matt. Please regale us.
Number one, ChatGPT has circled back and thrown us a real curveball. He's come in with Come and See, Rob, 1985.
I'm shocked. I'm floored.
This war film, directed by Elm Kilmov, portrays the horrors of the Nazi occupation in Belarus during World War II. It offers a raw and visceral depiction of the devastating impact of war on innocent civilians, making it a haunting and unforgettable film.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah, it's pretty much what is normally written about Come and See.
Yeah, you know, it is one that sticks with you, and it's, you know, it's one we've yet to do on the show, but we have plans to cover it, obviously, because you can't not rate Come and See. It's a world of its own, isn't it? It's an absolute, it's a mind fuck, really. You know, you have to. Is it a movie for a certain mood? I don't think
very much so. Yeah,
you can't just go.
Absolutely fascinating film.
Yeah, it really, really is, and I don't think any. There's been attempts to replicate it, but no one's ever got the Come and See-ness of a film.
Yeah,
ever again. You know,
it's almost, it's obvious. It's an obvious number one, but again, yes, for the mainstream war movie watcher, they might have heard of Come and See, but they might not have watched it, or they may never have heard of it. It just depends on whether you've read one of the, you know, top 100, top 10, top 50 war movies to see before you die lists.
Yeah, exactly.
Because it's normally on there somewhere, rightfully so, often, you know. Again, objective, but very interesting list from ChatGPT, I think.
Yeah, two interesting lists. I mean, it's interesting just to see what an AI can do.
It surprised me. I will be honest.
No, it did surprise me as well.
It provided something a little less obvious than I thought. And the second list definitely really did surprise me, in that it's throwing out things that are genuinely obscure. It's not just things that it's seen listed as obscure that aren't really that obscure, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. No, exactly. It's interesting. And I think, you know, this week we thought it was important to do something with AI just to show people how easy it is to utilize, and how threatening it could possibly be to people in the creative industry. Probably the reason why people are striking, you know, as well as residual fees that need to be sorted out. But,
well, it absolutely is one of the key things that,
of course,
SAG-AFTRA are discussing at the moment, and the writers, because, you know, that a studio taking the likeness of someone, or a studio using AI to imitate a style of a writer.
Yes.
That is fundamental stuff. It undermines creativity. It undermines the sacrosanctness of art, almost. I mean, that sounds kind of wanky, but it is kind of true.
It goes against why we do this, because we love the creativity of our fellow human beings. We love to see projects come from someone's thought process or thought stream, and then 5 years, 10 years later, they are something tangible you can own or go and see or support, or, you know, buy the t-shirt of. You know, there's so many things this affects, not just you going to see a movie, not just you you know, eating your popcorn in your seat, enjoying yourself. There's so much this affects. Mm-hmm. So we just thought in this week we would highlight it, and then you know use it to talk about some more films.
Yeah, it's important to emphasize that a lot of people that are striking are not big, well-known writers and actors. These people are jobbing, and they make a hand-to-mouth living.
Jokes. Yeah, right.
In some cases,
you know, like me and Matt, we're regular Joes who write for a living, we understand the hardships. You know people who don't might not know, who don't do it, you get paid like on publication. So I go months without getting a check. Yeah,
that is the nature of it sometimes.
It's just how it works. Or, you know, if you write per piece, the amounts that you get are quite limited per piece now. They used to be bigger, but it's just how it...
Well, again, publishing is going to face the similar sort of issues from AI that the film and TV industry is facing. So just a really interesting thing to highlight and discuss. And also, we always love discussing a good list.
Of course. Who doesn't? But yeah, there we go. That was this week's episode, guys. I know it's a bit different to what we usually do. We don't usually get all on our soapbox, but we felt this week really important to just lay out how we feel, and maybe maybe it'll inspire you guys to go out and find more about this strike and how it is could potentially affect the industry and everything else. Do go away and find there's some fantastic people who are striking and actually making content about it. Adam Conover, a comedian. He's a writer. He's been striking for months now. Go and check him out. He does some great stuff about all that. Do join us next week when we will be back for another war movie review. But it won't be Oppenheimer. So take that what you will. Thanks for listening. And always, if you want to start from episode one of the pod and catch up, use fightingonfilm.com. We can find the rest of the back catalogue there.
Thanks for watching, everyone. Bye.
Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
Did I say what? I said watching. I meant listening. Watching. Bye.
Bye.
I make YouTube videos. What can I say?
Love it.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.